Hello and welcome to More Than Tracy Turnblad, the podcast about fat representation in entertainment. My name is Abby Rose Morris, and today I'm here with Ashley Monique Bernard, who is an awesome actor and multi-hyphenate. She also has her own podcast called the F Your Fears podcast. I highly recommend it. And she has her own web series, which is called The Art of Blowing It. So Ashley and I recorded an interview a couple weeks ago, and then we immediately realized that we had not been recording. So we had to go back and redo the interview. So if throughout this interview, you are hearing a lot of references to the previous conversation we had, that is why. So I hope you enjoy that interview. But first, couple of things. First, I want to remind you to review and rate and subscribe. That helps us so much to get the word out about the podcast. And I would really, really, really love it if you took the truly 10 seconds it takes to do that. And second of all, I want to talk to you about something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. And actually, now that I think about it, has plagued me for like a lot of my life. And that is like, how can people in our lives, fat people's lives, my life, sit with us and watch movies and TV with very demeaning fat tropes and just laugh and expect us to participate in that, and then yet be so unwilling to hear the word fat, so afraid to use the word fat, so resistant to hearing us describe ourselves as fat that they will literally say, no, you're not fat, you're beautiful, if you ever try to describe yourself as fat, even if you are, especially when you are. This has been happening to me for so much of my life, and it's always just like felt really icky and confusing to me, and I couldn't figure out why it was that someone could sit with me in a movie theater, on a couch, whatever, and just like be laughing at these tropes that were like actively harming people who look like me. And I started thinking about it, and something that came up on an episode a couple weeks ago with Sarai Cole was, I remember saying offhand, oh, a lot of these fat tropes implicitly give us permission to be cruel to fat people. And I think I just thought that in the moment. And then I kept thinking about it for the past few weeks. And I was like, wow, that is actually really true. And the deeper you look into each trope, the clearer I can see it. So, I mean, the most obvious example I would say is fat suits, because there's automatically an element of it being removed from reality because we know it's a fat suit. And that's part of the joke, is that this actor is not really fat. And I think there is some deeply buried in there, this like implicit idea that it's like, oh, it's okay to laugh because it's not a real fat person and they can just take the fat suit off. So like, it's not harming anyone. No one's getting hurt. It's a harmless joke. And, you know, we don't cast a fat actor as Fat Schmidt. We have the guy who plays Schmidt, Max Greenfield, put on a fat suit instead. And that way, you're still seeing the actor you know is not fat, and it doesn't feel real, even real in the world of the story. And then also, a big one I think is Fat Amy, and that sort of whole genre of character of like the hyper-confident fat person. With Fat Amy in particular, she vocally calls herself fat and says, because otherwise skinny bitches like you will do it behind my back. And while this seems empowering on the surface, and like it can be in a way because we should reclaim the word fat if that's something that we as fat people want to do, and that's like absolutely on an individual basis, no one has to reclaim it, no one has to not reclaim it. But when you have that character saying that, and then you have a bunch of jokes at the expense of her fatness, it basically just reads like, oh, she knows she's fat, so it's okay to laugh. It's okay to laugh. She thinks it's funny too. Like, you can't hurt her with this. Because she knows she's fat, nothing you say will surprise her, therefore nothing you say can hurt her. I also talked in a recent TikTok about how we conflate confidence with invincibility, and I think this is where that gets really harmful, because we think if someone is confident, that's just a permanent state of being. While that is not the case, and in fact, a lot of our ability to be confident, unfortunately, does come from how we are perceived and we know whether we're matching up to societal standards. And of course you can get beyond that and be confident anyway. And like, isn't that what we're all striving for? But it's harder. It's like a lot harder. And just because somebody loves themselves doesn't mean that a hurtful comment won't hurt them, because that comment is hurtful. And then you have like the stupid fat characters who are like just kind of happy-go-lucky. It's sort of the guy version of that like confident woman who calls herself fat or doesn't care that she's fat or is sexually aggressive. Like, it's sort of the flip side of that, because a lot of these characters are men. They're like happy-go-lucky, just stupid, too stupid to realize they're being made fun of a lot of the time, therefore it's okay to make fun of them. It's going to go right over his head. And then, of course, you have the fat person eats all the time trope. Of course, these tropes are overlapping, and some characters are multiple, and some characters are parts of some and not others. But when you have this fat person who eats everything, obviously the idea here is that, oh, they did this to themselves. Therefore, it's okay to be really mean to them because they practically signed up for it by eating when they knew it would cause them to get fat and continuing to eat. So it's like slides right neatly into that American individualism, capitalism mindset that we love in this country, because if it's the person's responsibility, it's not the government's responsibility, and it's the person's responsibility to buy things to fix it. I think that the eats everything trope probably is the most clear example of this, which is so gross. Nobody chose to be discriminated against. Even if being fat was a choice, fat people would not deserve all the abuse that they get or all the harmful portrayals in media. At the end of the day, I think what this comes down to is fat characters are not portrayed as full humans, because full humans have, you know, get hurt. Full humans have humanity. And of course, the full human fat people you know in your real life, you think they're full humans. But when fat people aren't portrayed in media or on screen or on stage or anywhere as full people, real people who are more than just fat, then we think it's okay to make fun of them for being fat because that's all they are. So I would love to know if you agree with that. Like, shoot me a DM on Instagram or TikTok or comment on something. I'm super curious to hear if this resonates with more people. I really think that it is a deeply buried in layers of implication, but I really think that it is there, that we are getting these messages that it's okay to laugh. And that is, as like crappy as it is, I'm also like, wow, it's just so interesting. So yeah, let me know if you agree, because I've been thinking about this a ton. All right, so now without further ado, my interview, take two, with Ashley Monique Vinard. Hello again, Ashley.
Hello.
But hello for the first time from all our listeners.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm all right. It's a day.
It's a day. It's a day. It's, you know, this is technology. Like you were saying,
we just
recorded the entire podcast. Now you guys are going to get, like, we just did previews. Now you guys are getting opening night. Boom.
Yes, exactly. Great way. Great way to jump in. All right. So let's start here. Tell us your origin story of how you got into the arts and what you're doing now.
I got into the arts. I grew up a little girl in Lafayette, Louisiana, next to a bayou, a little Cajun girl. I got into the arts because of Julie Andrews. She was just climbing up a mountain, doing her thing, screaming about the hills, being alive. And I used to do her accent, and everyone was like really impressed that I could do it. And I was like, is that not a normal thing? can no one else sound like Julie Andrews? What? So at a young age, I got hooked by the bug, and I really wanted to be on Barney when I was a kid. Like, I wanted to the whole PBS route and like get one of those shows and be a child star. So yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So what happened after you left Louisiana?
I left Louisiana. I moved to New York to go to school at AMDA, the American Musical and Dramatic Academy for musical theater. I got here, started doing musical theater, got told very quickly that I wasn't going to work until my 40s. And I was like, I'm not going to work till my 40s. And then it was like, oh, but I'm going to work in my 40s. So there's
relatable. Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. The pro and the con. And yeah, I just started doing the New York thing and like doing what we all used to do before COVID of you know, getting cast in someone's cabaret, selling tickets and doing a show at Duplex and then writing your own cabaret. And then I did a show called Date Me, Do Me, Dump Me, which was like a lot of fun, super scandalous. And I did Cuff Me, the 50 Shades of Grey musical parody off Broadway. And yeah, I did a lot of
Cuff Me.
It was so much fun. So yeah, I got to play some really cool characters and now I do mostly like film and TV, but I do love my musical theater roots.
Mm-hmm. So when did you first start noticing size showing up for you in your work in the arts?
It was at a pretty young age. You know, I wanted to be Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, but I was fat. And so I wasn't going to be Dorothy. I was going to be more of like a patriarchal type character. And then I wanted Aunt Em, but they were like, you can't be Aunt Em because you can sing. And so instead I got this small role called Gloria, who sang Merry O Land of Oz. And so like that was one of the first times like I noticed my size was a thing. But then I got super lucky the next year and I played Yenta in Fiddler on the Roof, which was, I mean, is a holy grail of a character.
A dream role for me, for sure.
Such a fun one. And then I got to play the stepmother senior year in high school. And so I got to play older women and I just figured that's what musical theater was. But whenever I got to New York and got cast like in showcases and stuff, I was playing old and I was like, okay, well, I guess that's just what it is.
Yeah. Did you find that it was like as slow as you expected before being 40?
No, well, maybe. I've done my own thing in my career and that's one of the reasons that I've branched out of just musical theater, because I was finding that the roles were fewer and far between. So if they're so far between, why am I not diversifying myself to where I can do other things in different realms? So that's why I've kind of hopped in with plus size modeling and voiceover and podcasting and creating my own work and doing film and TV and commercials. So like I've kind of put myself in all of these other categories basically because musical theater didn't want to love me as hard as I wanted it to.
Oh, I so understand. Yeah. I'm right there with you.
It's for the best though.
Yeah, definitely. And all those other things are so exciting and beautiful in their own right. I do want to touch a little bit more on the ageism piece of like being told you're not going to work until you're in your 40s.
Yeah.
I have been told that in like other areas of my life too. Like I've definitely had some like well-meaning family members tell me that like the other girls are going to lose their looks by the time you're 30, they're 30, but you'll just be growing into yours and like you won't get married till you're older. And to me, that was kind of a fatphobic microaggression, to be honest, because I was like, so you're like hoping that one day I'll be better looking than I am now? Like, ouch. Especially when I was like, you know, a young kid.
But that's just fear of whoever was giving you that information.
Yeah.
Like that's just transference from what they've got going on. But for the child that you were, you didn't know that. So
Right. And you have to have a little distance from it before you can see it for what it is, which is like they want what's best for you. They want to protect you. And like they say that because they want something good for you.
Totally. When I was a kid, my mom, she used to pet my back and she would ride over my little roll and she would say, "Oh, Ashley, if you can see it, they can see it." And that like really stuck in with just I thought everyone was looking at me all the time. And so that really like added to so much of my personality. And it's so funny because like years later, I realized like no one cares. No one cares what you look like. No one is looking at your fat roll on your back.
Oh, yeah.
Or even if they are, they are not going to care nearly as much as you do about it because it's not that important. What else are you doing in your life?
Yeah. So let's talk about F your fears a little bit.
Yeah. So F your fears started because I got really lonely during the pandemic, which I think we all did. And mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to people and I wanted to talk to my friends who were super talented and creative. And so at first it just kind of started with like artist spotlight and like talking about how people got from point A to point B in their careers. Mm-hmm. And then I really wanted to focus more with fear and how people deal with fear, just because there's something to learn from that, you know. And yeah. I love podcasts like the Marc Maron Show, where you get that like origin story of where someone came from. But I wanted to do it in my own way. And, you know, I've dealt with a lot of fear in my life, and I've also pushed myself to move past that, deal with it, sometimes for the best, sometimes not for the best. But mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, my tombstone's going to say she tried. Like, it's all good.
Yeah.
But I feel like with the podcast, I wanted to be able to connect with people, share their stories, and just like talk about fear and get it done.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that's like so present in a lot of our lives. I notice it so much for myself. And yet we have so little space to really talk about it and mm-hmm. really, you know, tackle it.
Yeah.
Because like the only way out is through.
Totally. Alanis Morissette wrote this really great song, and that was one of the lyrics.
Oh, the really?
The only way out is through. The closer we're in, the better. I can't remember what the words were.
I literally
were,
didn't know that. Yeah. I thought I coined that
so
phrase.
Good.
Okay, sorry,
no.
Alanis.
Yeah, yeah. She's always getting to the punch before everyone else.
Oh, that's so
her.
True.
I love her so much. But yeah, I started the pod, and I've had musicians, actors, singers, mm-hmm. every sort of creative. I've even had a couple of licensed therapists come on, and I ask them questions, and it's just, it's been super informative. And I have a small but mighty following that just really, they dig it, and I dig it, and I love bringing it to them. And it's a great way just to do my part of connection with humanity.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
So important, especially in this time.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. All right. So as you have been a professional actor, voiceover artist, podcaster, all the things mm-hmm. in New York City, what affirming experiences have you had where you feel like you were seen and valued?
Oh, my biggest one wasn't even in New York. I was doing Cuff Me, the 50 Shades of Grey musical parody, which was here, mm-hmm. but we did like a little tour of it. And that tour went to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I'm from Louisiana. So about 50 of my family members and friends drove to Baton Rouge from Lafayette, which is like 2 hours. And they came to see me in the 50 Shades of Grey musical parody.
Aww.
And that was like, that was the biggest life affirming in the craft, being able to share my gift with people that just saw it from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so that was like the biggest thing for me. And I got to be sexy and fearless and funny
yeah.
and weird and a little bit of everything in the show. And it was funny because at the end, my uncle went to my dad and was like, "Bet you didn't think you'd ever see your daughter come."
Oh,
little did he know he'd see it two more times
in the musical.
Well, no, I've done a couple of I did this show called Step Into My Office, and I play a Harvey Weinstein type character with a gender swap, and I showed my parents this project.
Gotcha.
And my dad was like, "Oh, okay." And it wasn't anything like, because one of my things is I'm not going to do anything I wouldn't feel comfortable showing my parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me. Everyone's
got different parents, so it's going to be.
But also I've also done a lot of things that I want them to see what I do. Mm-hmm. I'm so proud of it that I want them to see what I do. And so I've showed them all of the projects that I've done, and I've had three roles where I've had to come either on stage or in front of camera, and like, mm-hmm. it just adds to it. And each orgasm was just so different, like they are, you know.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about body stuff and how that's come up in your, you know, professional actor life. Mm-hmm. Has that been different since you left school, or are there experiences that are similar?
Yeah, I think that when I left school, it was kind of like, I left school and I felt very much like I'm a little fat girl hoping to get some work.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I did a lot of things to lose weight and really did a lot of things just to like find myself. I got really into coke in my early 20s, and mm-hmm. I did it for soothing. I did it for just what are the reasons people do drugs? Like,
yeah,
to try to go to another universe where you feel more comfortable because of X, Y, and Z. And so I kind of got lost in that for a minute, and I lost a lot of weight. And it was like a 2.0 version of Ashley, like skinny Ashley, which mm-hmm. me at 190 is the skinniest I've ever been. And that was like, you know, hot to trot. I look back at photos and I'm like, damn, bitch. And at the time, like, I felt like I had such a big gut and like I was so frustrated. And now I'm 274 and I'm like, bitch, you got to lose some weight because of your joints. Like, mm-hmm. we need to make sure these joints can work for as long as possible. So there is that factor of like, I don't know where I'm going with this, but like, yes, I did notice. Yes. My answer to your question is yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to note that your lowest weight was like not achieved through healthy means.
No, I was doing SlimFast. I also should add that gotcha. In there. I was doing SlimFast and cocaine. And I was skinny. I was, right. you know, I was thinner. I was yeah. by no means skinny. But yeah, it was achieved not by the best way, but I got positive feedback. Everyone mm-hmm. said I looked great. You know, and even my mom, it was funny though, because there was this one time I was snuggling with my mom, because yes, I'm an overgrown child. And I was like, look, mama, you can feel my bone. And my mom looked at me and she said, Ashley, don't lose too much weight, baby. And I'm like, shit, I can't do anything right for you. And she's like, I just worry. And like, she had no idea at the time that I was struggling with what I was struggling with.
Right.
And but
moms always know.
Yeah, but you know. My mama just wants me to be the best Ashley Monique Menard ever. Like mm-hmm. she just wants me to flourish. And anytime she says something where I'm like, why are you saying that? Why are you pushing my buttons? Like it's coming from who she is as a person, the trauma that she's had. Like there's so much that goes into it, and like
yeah,
we take it personally because we came out of these people. We're products of
but
them,
they all so. Have their own,
but they do, and we yeah. don't give them the grace sometimes, or we get so stuck in our own shit, or they've damaged us so much that like we can't even like swim to the top of the water and get air. Like there's yeah. I know it's not linear, like I know that it's just it's all over the place
for sure,
but yeah, my mom, she's tried so hard. And so,
yeah.
again, my answer is yes.
Right. that totally just goes back to like, you know, kind of the empathy that you have for people in other situations.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I mean, we talked about a little bit in our previous conversation that was tragically mm-hmm. not recorded
yeah.
about how people really have like a very linear idea of weight loss and that it's always good and weight gain is always bad, but like that's mm-hmm. not, it's like a lot more nuanced than that.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, but in terms of holding people accountable for saying those things and believing those things, you have to also like kind of go into their experience and think where it's coming from, because I think people really do usually have a good intention.
Totally. Like someone congratulating you for losing weight and stuff. Like I know there's been some stuff that's popped up lately. Like me and my friend Josh, we talk about this because we have some friends who are in the bear community, and they're basically becoming otters because they've lost so much weight. And my friend Josh is like, well, we shouldn't be congratulating them because of a weight loss. And I'm like, I think we should, because they have been going to the gym and working really fucking hard. And so I'm congratulating you on your accomplishment of your time that you're investing in yourself, doing what you're doing that you are proud of. And yeah. I say congratulations for that, because that's like, I know whenever I was going to Mark Fisher Fitness and like working out and like really dedicating, and like I felt so proud of myself, and hearing that I look strong fucking made my day.
Yeah, it's just tough because you need to make sure that you know that you have to have a little more information, I think, to know that they're working hard and doing something that's like healthy. And it's tough because I don't think you can always know. But if you can tell in your conversations with people if they want the praise.
That's true. I don't know. I guess it's so like, I guess, and maybe it's just conditioning and instilled, but I think that like, I don't know. I think everyone likes to get a compliment. You look nice. You sound smart. You're cool. Like, people like to hear nice things. And especially if you're looking at them and you're thinking, wow, this is cool. I'd like to tell you that.
Yeah.
The intention, like you said, the intention is good coming behind, but it's like, what's the overall arc, I guess? Is what
right. It's like intention. Yeah. Good intentions can still harm people in certain situations, but like, how do you know what situation it is?
Yeah.
You know? It's tricky. It's such a sensitive thing.
It is. It really is. I think the body positive movement's done a really good job of just trying to celebrate people and just like love your body.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely does have its issues, but I will say like the fact that it is so in the mainstream now is incredible.
Yeah.
Because that just was not the case 10, 15 years ago. Like, you know, and even when I was growing up, and I'm like a much younger millennial, elder Gen Z kind of zillennial.
I like that.
You know, and I remember George Bush being president. I think if you remember George Bush being president, you probably were growing up in a time where there was not really much positivity ever associated with anyone in a larger body. Like,
yeah.
It was just very black and white. And then to have this like whole counter movement come in, like now is incredible, and like it definitely does have its issues, which we can get into in another episode, but I really appreciate that it is there, because we just didn't have that, and you're just never gonna convince everyone, you know what I mean? You're just never gonna get everyone on board, but yeah. The fact that so many people are is incredible.
Oh, totally. I think that, I mean, so much of how we judge other people is based on the influences and the motivations that we have within our own life. And try to get everyone on board is just a losing game, only because you have so many different pockets of people. And it's just not going to happen. But I think that there's definitely enough nuance in the niches to where you can condition yourself to be surrounded by like-minded people for such a huge portion of everything that you're consuming.
Yeah, it's so true.
I mean,
those algorithms are smart.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
So you're in school for marketing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to the Eastern Gateway Community College, and you can too for free, especially if you're a member of Actors Equity. I'm going through Union Plus, and basically, if you're part of a union, you can sign up for these classes, and they're totally free, and you'll get an associate's at the end of your 2 years or however long it takes you to do it. So yeah, I started doing it because a friend of mine was doing it, and I enrolled during COVID to go to school for business with a focus in social media and marketing. And since then, it's been so eye-opening just seeing like how the fucking cookies get cooked and made and all that shit.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And I'm learning, and it's exactly what I need right now at this day in my life, in this next realm. And I went back because I knew the F Your Fears podcast is really special, and I knew that the Art of Blowing It's really special. And you can only do so much if you don't have a lot of money and you're just a person just trying to, you know, make it work. So like, what can you do? Information. The more you know about something, the more that you can try and grow something. So that's why I went back. And so far it's, I'm still in the learning process. So I'm not implementing all of the skills, but I am working on my marketing strategy, and I will be laying out my tactics and doing my stuff just to grow it. Cause like, I'm great. I'm so awesome. And everyone who knows me, like, knows it. And so it's like, I just need to get more people who know me. Cause I like me a lot. And so do my friends and my family.
I feel exactly the same.
Yeah. And you should. Like, you, we should. We should have that sense of confidence and self-worth of, like, I'm allowed to be here. Everyone can sit at the table. Sometimes you just have to wait for someone to get up. I grew up in a really large family, and that's exactly what it was. Like, you wanted some gumbo, you just had to wait, or you could sit on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of like, that's one of the things that I tell myself, like, just keep doing your, keep focusing on making yourself the ideal version and keep 2.0-ing and keep doing your updates on yourself. And it's going to work out, especially if you're investing in yourself.
Yeah. So, let's talk about the art of blowing it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me how that got started and what it means to you.
I love the art of blowing it so much. Like I said, I love child stars. I was fascinated by them as a kid. I love Macaulay Culkin, and I would like for you to come on the podcast, Macaulay. Actually, I'd like for you to be on season 2 of the Art of Blowing It. I would really like that. So that'd be cool. So we'll just pretend that's going to happen because it'd be great. But yeah, I was fascinated by former child stars and like, what's it like to get everything that you want at such a young age? And then to age into life and not keep getting all the things that you want. Like, what does that do to you? And so that's kind of where the art of blowing it started, along with I knew I wanted to write about an actor, but I also didn't want her whole journey to be about acting. I knew I wanted to write about love, but I didn't want the whole story to be about just love from a man to a woman.
Right.
And so I partnered with my friend Joshua R. Pangborn, and I got feedback from him. I took classes at Gotham Writers to really learn how to write a screenplay and how to make episodic TV. And Laura Calhill was my teacher, and she was just so amazing. And she's worked on so many shows. And so I learned a lot. I collaborated. And yeah, so we made it along with Oblivion Films and Sidekick Productions. We created The Art of Blowing It. You can find it on YouTube. It is an 11-episode, 15-minute type show. It's really fun, really campy, scandalous, raunchy. It's like The Comeback meets Ab Fab meets, I don't know, The Office. Or no, nice. Like Best in Show. You know, like weird. Yeah. So
awesome.
I love it. It's a dream come true. I'm so happy.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so amazing.
I love it. Like, worst case scenario, if I don't, which I know this sounds so silly, but like, worst case scenario, like, if I die tomorrow, like, look what I did.
Yeah. It's like you left a footprint.
I really did. And it's so fucking good. It's so good, Abby. And like, it's cool because like, I'm in it.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Like, you do something, you spend so much time like doing it, and you like disassociate yourself from it in order to be able to handle all the stuff. And like, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, that's my baby.
Yes.
Like, look at her. She
it's such a good feeling.
It's the best feeling. It's the best feeling ever.
Yeah.
So, and I love it when people watch it and what they have to say. So it's fun.
That's awesome. So how has writing for yourself and writing in general, like how has that experience been as far as being able to create the stories instead of auditioning for them?
Hugely. It was the biggest gift. It was the biggest gift I could give myself. And everyone had said it, you know, my friend Jenna Bosco, she had said it. Even Shara Ashley Zeiger, who I've known a long time, she even said it. Like,
she was on my first episode.
I know. Yeah. I know. I love that episode. Like, if you write something for yourself, you know, you allow yourself to be able to play in that world. And no one's going to write the stuff that you're going to write. No one's going to think the way that you're going to think. So if you give yourself that gift of something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you, sky could be the limit.
And, for sure.
And especially like if you look at with YouTube and everything, like look at Todrick Hall. Look how far Todrick's come just by loving Disney, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So there's so much that goes into it. And I think that really, really taking time to give yourself a great gift is just the biggest.
Awesome. So let's talk about some fat characters and representations that had a big impact on you.
Yeah.
So what was that like growing up?
When I was a kid, I really loved Kirstie Alley a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Delta Burke. I loved Roseanne. And I mean, even taking the woman aside from politics and from religion, like, and just using the art as what it was, like Roseanne was loud and abrasive, gregarious, and she handled business. And that show was a really big deal for me as a kid. Yeah. I wasn't supposed to watch it, and I'd watch it. And mm-hmm. between her and Laurie Metcalf, like that's your Lucy and Ethel. Like it was just so, it was really big. And Kirstie Alley, that like sexiness, but then, you know, she was a little thicker, and like I loved her. I thought she was the fucking the best. I mean, I do have some problems with Fat Actress. It's not my favorite, but I watched it and I'll still defend because I love Kirstie Alley, even though she's like wackadoo.
Yeah.
So those were some of the people. And then of course, French and Saunders. Jennifer Saunders was a really big influence. And so is Dawn French. Just the whole world of ab fab and, you know, fashion and taking like health conscious, obsessed with being thin and just the comedy that goes with that. It may not hold up well, but I love it. It's such a guilty pleasure.
Yeah. It also is like, it's funny how it's obsessed people are with being thin.
Yeah.
I mean, the lengths that we go to and the ridiculous things that we do. I mean, it's like a little bit, sometimes it's a little sad because it's like you're doing all that to hopefully be like more socially accepted.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Idina Monsoon, a lot of cases.
Idina Monsoon is a perfect example of that. Mm. I mean, you know, she the things that she does in order to lose weight so she feels better about herself, she goes to the extreme, and they did that on purpose. Like it's so well done, and it definitely shaped my style of comedy, and it definitely shaped me a lot.
So were there any like more negative representations that maybe taught you fat is bad?
I think that like, you know, there's always going to be a fat character. Now we call them tropes and stuff. Or I guess they were tropes mm-hmm. then, but I just didn't realize it. Like, you know, you've got in Heather's Martha mm-hmm. Dump Truck, I think was even her name. Like that's the nickname that they gave her. I don't know. That one just really stands out whenever I think of like youth. And I always felt so bad for Martha, but then everyone in that fucking movie
that's
is just
true.
Bats.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Bats.
And the movie doesn't endorse the bullying.
Yeah. That, oh my God. I love that movie. It's whack. It's
yeah, it is
so, so crazy. But yeah, I mean, there were definitely even like, oh, remember that show Now and Then? That movie Now and Then?
No, I never saw it.
Oh, I loved it. It was with Christina Ricci and Gabby Hoffman and Thora Birch. And I can't remember, they had a chubby girl in it. I can't remember her name. It was Ashley something something. But that movie a lot, because she was chubby and it was around the same time. And I was like, oh, I liked that one. Oh, and Goldie Hawn. Oh, yeah. So I recently watched Goldie Hawn and Miss Meryl Streep in Death Becomes Her. And, you know, there's like I get how it served the purpose in the story of showing Helen's character played by Goldie Hawn going mm-hmm. through a breakup and, you know, just getting fat, eating icing while literally going crazy on her couch. Mm-hmm. And then she goes to a mental asylum and then she loses weight. Yeah, yeah. With the cats. And it's just, you know, the stereotypical thing. But I mean, that movie is also just so, it's a fantasy. Like the movie's so fantasy that I get why they had to go to the extreme, but they also took, you know, a trope that could be damaging to some people watching it. Like I could see that Yeah. But I could also see why the creators made the choices that they made. Do I think it holds up well? No. But it was also made in the 90s. And I think
everything in the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, so much stuff in the 90s was viewed a certain, there was a strong askew, and I'm not making up for it. I'm just saying, like, can we still enjoy it within that realm? I choose to.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because the rest of the movie's so fucking good. It's just that one little beat that I'm like,
Yeah.
But I love the movie. The movie is amazing.
Those things do hurt me, but I still enjoy things that have them in it. I definitely think that that's like a real thing that happens. Like, yes, people do gain weight and eat frosting and get cats. Mm-hmm. And sometimes depression does cause weight gain, but also sometimes that's not the case. And sometimes people gain weight because they're happy. Or you talked about like how Coke was the thing that was making you lose weight.
Yeah.
At least partially. And like, so I think that just the issue is that like when this is the only representation we see, that's the problem. If it was a more sensitive thing, and that was, you know, if we saw both sides of it, it would be different.
Yeah.
Another one I want to talk about is Fat Monica, because that is one where I'm like, I really enjoy Friends, but those particular scenes really hurt me.
Yeah. Now I almost want to ask you a question. So what about it hurts you?
Okay, so as some of you watching may know, if you've seen Friends, there's like the main episode with Fat Monica is like the flashback to Thanksgiving, where Fat Monica tries to hit on Chandler, and Chandler like basically kicks her to the curb, and then the next year she's like lost a bunch of weight. It's like her revenge body, whatever. But then you like flash forward to seeing them as like a happily married couple, and it's just like that was really kind of disorienting for me, because it was like, oh, so he basically only loves her because she is thin, and if she were to gain weight, then he would stop loving her. Like, that's what I read it as. And of course their relationship's like a lot more developed in the future, but it is something that we see so much in media, is like worthiness equals love of a man equals thin. So I think those three things being conflated so much, like, it's just a really sore point for me.
Yeah, I totally get that. I totally get that, and I respect that. My question, though, to play devil's advocate,
would be,
do they do a good job of showing you that, do they do anything that shows you that Chandler would still love Monica if she gains weight?
I don't remember.
I've recently watched it, and that's and once the first Fat Monica episode pops up, I'm like, oh yeah, Fat Monica. I love Fat Monica as a kid. I loved her. I wasn't hurt by it at all.
Interesting.
Not at all. I watched it when it first came out, and I was in middle school, high school, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Oh yeah, she's fat. Okay. And like the jokes and stuff, and I'm like, oh,
she's
yeah.
very happy. She's not a sad fat girl until Chandler rejects her.
Until he rejects her, but then she ends up doing, which, I mean, every girl's gonna have some guy that rejects them.
And yeah, that's true.
There's gonna be like that moment, but the thing that I do have issue with now is just whenever we do watch it, and it's just fat joke, fat joke, fat joke, and I'm like,
right,
guys, you're such a funny show.
I know, it's such a crutch.
I wish we could have, but we were in the 90s.
Right. And it was everywhere. It was just like the go-to joke. It was like you could get such an easy laugh just by having a fat person fall down. I'm so glad I wasn't an actor in the 90s.
Yeah. Seriously. But I think even them having a character that was fat, even though there were flaws with the character, still, I mean, that's fat representation in TV, even though it was a skinny person being in a fat suit.
Yeah.
And it was a butt of a joke. It was still on TV, though.
I suppose that's true, because it is exposure, even if it's not positive representation. So it's like sometimes a little bit is better than nothing.
Seriously.
Even if it's not good.
It allows for something else to come after it. And so I think that it is important to kind of see that dynamic as well from being outside of it and seeing how it shaped things. Yes, it shaped things, and it's made a lot of people think X, Y, and Z, but it also put it in the eye.
Yeah, I think Roseanne is a good example of that too, right? Because even though the person has, it turns out, sucks, you still had that representation of like actually seeing a fat woman and seeing
fat
a fat woman.
Fat couple, a fat
life.
Couple.
Yes. Oh my God, I love John Goodman.
I do too. And we got to see love between two fat characters on TV, and there wasn't a joke about their weight. Like,
yeah.
Yes, there were jokes about weight on the show, but like, we got to see two people love each other in fat bodies. Yeah. And that was great.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't, it doesn't go unnoticed. It's not unimportant. I do also want to talk about something we had touched on in our previous recording about kind of the psychology of growing up fat and what that causes for people.
Yeah, I think that whenever you're younger, there's the stuff that's going on around you. And I think that a lot of fat people kind of go into one of two categories, the people pleasing, mm-hmm. or they develop like the bitch mentality of, well, I'm gonna come at you. Don't you fuck yeah. with me. I'm gonna come at you. And it's a tactic of how do you deal with the trauma that you've got going on where you feel threatened? You either do one thing or the other. You're going to absolutely love and, oh yeah, I'm here for you. And like, I want you to be okay.
Right.
And yeah, I know. Or what did you say? It's like the yeah. one or the other.
It's like you internalize it or you externalize it.
Totes. Mm-hmm. Totes.
Yeah. I mean, personally, like I was a pretty mean fat kid in retrospect. Like I mean, I wasn't your like stereotypical bully, but like I tried to distance myself from mm-hmm. the other fat kids mm-hmm. because I didn't want to be conflated with them, and I didn't want to be like a pariah in school. Mm-hmm. So I would be mean to them, and I would even make fun of their weight, even though I was literally also fat. But mm-hmm. It worked for the most part, yeah. which is really weird. And like, I'm very ashamed of the things that I did and said, but also I'm almost proud of myself for figuring out how to survive.
I mean, there's that. Like we're trying. We're not given a rule book of how to be the person that we're supposed to be.
Definitely.
And I had Christoph Zajac Denik on the show recently, and he's a little person. He was saying the same thing. Whenever he was younger, he distanced himself from other little people because he didn't mm-hmm. want to get pigeonholed for just being a little person, even though
for
clearly
sure.
he was. And I mean, When we're kids, we're trying to figure out how to exist in this world, and we create our personality of who we are, and it's just based on all the stuff that's going on around us. And as we keep growing up, we keep evolving into the person that we are becoming at the time that we're in. And I think crutches pop up. And I
yeah.
think, I mean, the more that you can heal and really kind of clearly look at yourself and like really like take a hard look and be super self-aware, but then even that's super hard.
Yeah.
We've all dealt with the bullies, whether they're in our head or mm-hmm. a person. I mean, I remember whenever I was in middle school, I was hanging out with my good friend Madonna LeBlanc and Brooke John, and this guy, Jared, came over, and Jared had this ducktail. He had this like cool ducktail. You remember the braid? It was like,
yeah.
it was like he had one long braid, and I just thought he was so cool. But Jared started making fun of me in sixth grade and like making fun of me hard, always calling me fat, making like a noise whenever I got up, like I was farting. And I was like, I can't with this guy. Like, I,
yeah.
and I had a crush on him too. And so it was super confusing for me. Like, I just,
yeah,
and
that's
then
rough.
Even, I mean, but that in itself is its own like diagnosis of like, why did I have a crush on him? Was it the challenge?
Yeah.
What is it?
Was it the rat tail?
It was totally the rat tail. But, but what ended up happening one day on the playground is he just like came after me and was like making fun of me. And I pushed him to the ground and I sat on him. And I bounced up and down and I was like, who's fat now? And clearly, I mean, that's not a smart question to ask. I was clearly still fat, but I was so hurt. I was so hurt
but,
by what he said
yeah.
to me that I wanted to just like put him in his place of where I felt. And
yeah.
he would have kept bullying me and I would have kept taking it. But
right.
I seized that moment. I pushed him down and then he cried. He cried and he got up and he cried and he ran away and he never made fun of me again because
Boom.
He just, I mean, But then there's the stuff that goes along with it. His mother was fat. And so when right. he looked at me, there was, you know, representation of lazy in his eyes or
definitely
whatever relationship he had with his mother. Yeah. And I also think he might have had a crush on me, which, I mean, kind of goes into that, because whenever you're younger, you like a girl, you either make fun of her to show it. Guys are fucking dumb. Like, guys are dumb. Guys are dumb. I've dated hundreds of guys and they're dumb. They're just dumb. They don't get it. And
yeah.
and they don't know how to process what's going on in their head. There's X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z. Like, anyway, Jared, if you're out there and you're listening, I'm single right now. And I would like to revisit what once was when I was on top of you. I think we should take it to the next level. Iconic. 2021.
Oh my God. I do have to just say that that's really amazing that you had this moment of like self-advocacy, like, yeah. and it just comes from pure instinct. And I think sometimes we have these instincts to like shut down and protect ourselves, but then you also have these instincts to fight for yourself. Like, yeah. sometimes there's something really strong in you that's like, no, I deserve to take up space. Mm-hmm. I remember as a kid, even though I was like, oh, I'm fat, so I'll never get a lead in the school play. Like, there was also a big part of me that was like, that's fucked up from the beginning. Like, I had that inside me that was mm-hmm. like, I deserve more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, everyone should have that inside of them of I deserve yeah. more. We all deserve a lot. We just have to go out there and get it.
Yes.
And sometimes it's really hard because there are things that tell you no. But then I look at other people that are super successful and I'm like, well, they figured out a way. I got to figure out my own way.
Absolutely.
Because they figured it out. And when you look at TV and you see some of the people who have been on TV and what they look like, they figured it out.
Yeah, they did.
There's hope.
There's totally hope.
There's hope. And it's like I always say, and I don't know if I said it in this podcast, but I know I said it in the other one. But... because I can't remember.
Okay.
I think that everyone gets to sit at the table. Sometimes you just have to wait until someone gets up.
Yep.
Well, it's my thing that I started quoting myself on because it's mm-hmm. so true. Like, it's yeah. just so true.
Definitely. So it's time for Cast Me Cowards, let's which is where it. You take one dream role that you wouldn't quote traditionally and quote be cast in due to your size.
I only have one dream role, period. So I guess it makes this just really easy. It's Mama Rose, Final Answer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've been saying it since I was 18.
Absolutely. Yeah. As you should. It's yeah. such a amazing role.
Yeah.
My dream role is Louise. And I think Fat Louise would be really interesting. And a Fat Louise and Mama Rose would be even more interesting.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think it gives like more dimension to the story to have... First of all, a Mama Rose who's like, I didn't get my due. Like, I had the talent. Why couldn't it have been me? Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, hello, the thesis of this podcast. Mm-hmm. And then you have like the daughter, Louise, who has overcome, like, despite that, she kind of starts out with that personality of like internalizing things and trying to put out like nice energy. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like making herself small. You know, emotionally, mentally. And then mm-hmm. she becomes like this burlesque artist stripper, like, and is like having her body be seen on stage in the most literal and thorough way possible.
Yeah.
And yeah, to have like a fat Mama Rose who was like, I could have done this and now she gets to do it. I think would be really interesting.
I also think it would be very interesting to modernize it and do it in 2021. Yeah.
I'm so down. If you want to do this, give me a call.
That would be so fun.
Yeah, because I think that is a story you could absolutely tell in the present, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got mad toddlers and tiaras vibes.
Seriously. Yeah. I like it. Let's do it. I'm sold.
I'll have my people call your people.
Perfect.
My people are me. So last question.
Yes.
What are you doing or what do you wish other people would do to combat fat phobia in the arts?
I wish that other people would write for the world that's in their head, and include all of the different types of people that they see in life. That's like my goal for life, you know, just representation for all different types, period, and just everything. And I guess maybe because I've lived in New York for 20 years, like the world that I see it is Sesame Street. Everyone looks different. I mean, when you have friends that are in different pockets, like, you just get to experience more of life. So why not write for that? Why not cast for that? And what I'm doing is I'm sharing stories on the F Your Fears podcast. I'm talking about fear and how to overcome it in order to maximize your life. And with The Art of Blowing It, you know, I wrote a really interesting character that anyone who played it would have been like, this is a fucking gift. But I get to play it. I gave that gift to myself.
Yes.
And I love that. I love it. I love it. Love it.
And that's self-care. Give yourself a gift.
Amen.
Yeah. All right. So do you have anything to plug or something you want to leave us with?
Abby, I think you're awesome.
Thank you.
I'd like to plug that. You're awesome. Everyone, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe. Leave a review. Rate and review this podcast, just because, like, why not? And then
you're already here.
Yeah. You're already here. It takes 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like people. So I'm at Now Starring Ashley on the gram and www.fufias.com.
It's EFF.
EFF, baby. EFF. F it. F your fears. Yeah. So that's how you can find me. I want everyone out there to just maximize their life. Like, I just, that's like my wish for everyone is just to extend kindness to others outside of yourself as well as in yourself. Like, just extend kindness to yourself and just give yourself the gift of growing and nurturing who you are. That's my wish for humanity.
Amazing. Beautiful. Yeah. So thank you so much
for recording
this interview twice.
Of course.
I had fun both times.
Me too.
I hope y'all have had fun listening. I wish you all the very best. Cannot wait to listen to more F Your Fears and watch The Art of Blowing It.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so excited. You have to tell me what you think.
I definitely will.
Cool.
All right. Bye, Ashley.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to More Than Tracy Turnblad. If you liked it, hit subscribe and leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. That would be awesome. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, all at More Than Tracy T. And just tell your friends. Word of mouth is great, too. You can find more information at morethantracyturnblad.com.